الذكر كالأنثى وإني سميتها مريم وإني أعيذها بك وذريتها من الشيطان الرجيم فتقبلها ربها بقبول حسن وأنبتها نباتا حسنا وكفلها زكريا كلما دخل عليها زكريا المحراب وجد عندها رزقا قال يا مريم أنى لك هذا قالت هو من عند الله إن الله يرزق من يشاء بغير حساب
In the name of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. When the wife of Imran said, My Lord, dedicate to you what is in my belly in consecration, accept it from me. Indeed, you are the All-Hearing, the All-Knowing. And when she bore her, she said, My Lord, I have borne a female child, and Allah knew better what she had borne. And the female is not like the male. I've named it Mary, and I commend her and her offspring to your care against evil of the outcast Satan. Thereupon her Lord accepted her with a gracious acceptance and made her grow up in a worthy fashion, and he charged Zechariah with her care. Whenever Zechariah visited her in the sanctuary, he would find provision with her. He said, O Mary, from where does this come for you? She said, It comes from Allah. Allah provides whomever He wishes without any reckoning.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to Iran Radio, and I'm your host, Asma. I hope you have enjoyed our program up until now. Up next, we have news keeping you updated with the latest headlines. Then we have Radio Productions, delivering another wave of informative content curated just for you by our dedicated team. Next up, the Ocean of Da dives deep into spiritual supplications. In this program, we reflect on the rich spiritual heritage of Islamic supplications and ziyarat texts passed down from the Ahlul Bayt as beautifully preserved in dua collections like Mafatih al-Jinan. Each episode offers a brief yet meaningful commentary on selected du'as and ziyarat. Following that, another segment of Radio Productions, we've put together a variety of engaging pieces for your listening enjoyment. Discover something new with us. Stay tuned for the news, please.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Nearly 110 Palestinians are killed in Israel's indiscriminate strikes in a single day as the regime presses ahead with its genocidal war across the territory. And the UK and Portugal are set to recognize Palestine on Sunday as Israel facing growing backlash over its ongoing genocide of Palestinians in Gaza. Hello and hope you're having a good day. I am Bahman Roy and this is News. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has warned it will give a decisive and crushing response to any new act of aggression against the country. In a statement, the IRGC said Iran will give another fatal and punishing response to any hostile move against national security or territorial integrity of Iran, especially by Israel and the US. The IRGC said the armed forces are well equipped for such a decisive response. The force added that Iran has reached effective deterrence and combat readiness as the 12-day defense against the U.S.-Israeli aggression clearly showed. The force issued a statement to mark the anniversary of the Iraqi-imposed war of 1980s on Iran. The IRGC vowed further development of advanced military technologies and systems to maintain effective deterrence against enemies. Dozens more Palestinian civilians have been killed in Israel's fresh strikes on Gaza as the regime's genocidal war rages on across the blockaded territory. Nearly 110 Palestinians were killed in Israel's indiscriminate strikes on Saturday in Gaza City, which has been the focal point of the regime's latest aggression. Four civilians were killed in an airstrike on a residential building in the Adaraj neighborhood. The regime also committed a new massacre south of Gaza City, killing nearly two dozen civilians in the bombing of a residential area in the city's As-Sabra neighborhood. Many others were injured or went missing. An earlier strike killed four Palestinians west of Gaza City. Three civilians also lost their lives in a drone strike on a tent for displaced families west of the Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza. Medical sources reported two new deaths from malnutrition, raising the total toll to 442. The death toll from the Israeli genocide now exceeds 65,200, with over 166,200 others injured. Our correspondent in Gaza, Ghari Ibrahim, earlier joined us for more details about the Israeli attacks on the Strip.
And the Gaza City is the focal point of the Israeli attacks, in which the Israeli occupation army concentrated and focused attacks and massacres since early this night. So we are talking about a very horrific scene from the corridors of Ashifa Hospital, in which the Israeli occupation army committed massacres against the families in North Gaza and in north of the Strip. Many bodies of the martyrs are now boiling up in the corridors and in the morgues of Ashifa hospitals. Around 24 Palestinians were killed since midnight until now in many horrific massacres Israeli occupation army committed against mainly three families: Al-Haddad family, Mohsin family, and Dogmosh family. One family, Dogmosh family, was targeted. The building or the residential building of Dogmosh family was targeted, and that resulted in the killing of 16 of the same family. The same family also was subjected to another massacre yesterday that resulted in the killing of 8 of them. And that again highlights how the Israeli occupation army is stalking the survivors and stalking the families in their destinations and in their displacement shelters again and again.
Many Palestinians have been forced to leave Gaza City as the Israeli regime ramps up its large-scale military operations there. Families are seen moving south along the coastal Wadi Gaza route, some in trucks and others pushing carts with their belongings. Let's listen to some of them to see how they are feeling right now.
We are headed toward the unknown. We are headed south to the unknown. Nobody knows where they are going. Are we going back to Gaza or not? Allah knows. The circumstances are hard, and life is hard. Everything in Gaza is hard beyond description.
The situation is hard and there are no life necessities. No water, electricity, or internet. People are forced to leave with nothing. They target us with things that you wouldn't imagine, like science fiction. They target us with missiles that we have never heard of.
We were crying all the way, for our country and for what happened to us. We feel sad for ourselves and for our children. They cry a lot. We cry for the martyrs we left under the rubble and our relatives we couldn't save.
Hamas has strongly condemned Israel's use of explosive-laden and remote-controlled vehicles in Gaza, calling it a war crime and a full-fledged act of ethnic cleansing. The movement said the fascist Israeli army drives these vehicles deep into residential neighborhoods to detonate them and cause maximum destruction and killing. It cited rights and humanitarian groups as saying that nearly 120 such vehicles carrying hundreds of tons of explosives have been detonated in Gaza City within just 1 week. Hamas described Israel's move as an unprecedented criminal scene in human history. It added that Israel's war criminal prime minister is committing horrific crimes in Gaza City in order to destroy it and forcibly displace its residents. The movement called on the international community and the Arab and Islamic nations to take immediate and practical steps to stop Israeli war criminal leaders and hold them accountable for their crimes. Political analyst Rick Sterling was with us earlier. He says American-made explosives-laden vehicles are being used in Gaza to carry out unprecedented acts of destruction and terror.
That's a new level of criminality. People on the ground there are reporting that that the blasts are so powerful that it's that they're heard 40 kilometers away. What we're seeing is psychological terror in addition to everything else. So the Israeli government is clearly trying to destroy all of Gaza City to make life uninhabitable there. It's an unprecedented scale of destruction. And the one aspect of this is that they are using, the vehicles that they're using for these explosions are American-made M113 armored personnel carriers that are booby-trapped with 7 tons of explosives. And they're using U.S. military equipment to commit war crimes and genocide. So this is, in addition to violating international law, they're violating U.S. law. The use of car bombs was actually pioneered by the Zionists. In the 1930s and 1940s, the Irgun terrorist organization and the Stern Gang used car bombs to destroy markets, killing dozens and dozens of people. They attacked the Haifa police station. They attacked Jaffa. So there's a history of this, and what we're seeing is the culmination now, where they're the where they're using these armored personnel carriers. They're calling them loaded with 7 tons of explosives.
In Mexico, protesters gathered outside the Israeli embassy in the capital, Mexico City, to protest the regime's war on Gaza and the government's weak reaction to the genocide unfolding in the besieged strip.
I know Trump's foot is on our necks, and Trump is behind Israel. Israel is Trump. Trump is Israel.
It is a genocide, and it makes me very sad that the world does not act, that governments do not oppose it more firmly and prevent this from happening. It is a sadness for humanity.
Holding banners and chanting slogans in support of Palestinians, they called on Mexico City to sever ties with Tel Aviv. The demonstrators denounced their government for failing to send a strong message in support of the Palestinians in Gaza. They also criticized the international community for its inaction over what's happening in the Gaza Strip, which is facing a humanitarian crisis due to 2 years of Israeli genocidal war. Thousands of protesters have taken to the streets across the occupied Palestinian territories for another weekly demonstration. They held mass rallies in Tel Aviv and Al-Quds, demanding a ceasefire with Hamas and a comprehensive prisoner exchange deal. Protesters waved flags, chanted slogans, and carried banners bearing photographs of Israeli captives in Gaza. This slammed Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's far-right cabinet for condemning the captives to death by continued attacks on Gaza rather than negotiating a ceasefire. The protesters said Israel must withdraw from Gaza so that its people would be able to reconstruct their life and cities. In the city of Kafr Saba, hundreds of protesters stormed a building where an event for the ruling Likud party was to be held, clashing with the regime forces. Although the occupied territories have witnessed such protests on a weekly basis for many months now, Netanyahu insists on continuing the war on Gaza. Britain and Portugal are expected to recognize the Palestinian state today, ahead of a key week at the UN's gathering, where a group of nations are set to do the same to pressure Israel over Gaza. According to British media, Prime Minister Keir Starmer is set to announce the policy shift. Portugal's foreign ministry also confirmed on Friday that it will officially declare its recognition on Sunday. World leaders will convene in New York this week for a high-stakes debate at the UN, where the two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict will take center stage. France and Canada are among other Western nations expected to endorse Palestinian statehood in the coming days. Israel, which opposes the move, has threatened to assert full control over the West Bank in response. Israeli forces have stormed a town south of Jenin in the occupied West Bank. The forces reportedly abducted many Palestinians during the raid. The incursion is part of a month-long campaign of deadly raids and arrests by the regime in the West Bank. Naka Hamid is with us right now from Ramallah for more details. Very good to have you on the program, Naka. Tell us, what are the latest developments in the region?
Good morning to you, Bahma, and to all of our viewers from the occupied West Bank over here. Many updates have happened, at least for the last 12 hours here, as the Israeli forces, just like you have mentioned, they press ahead and they continue their policy of aggression against the Palestinian cities. One of the most, the major headlines that took the news today was that the Israeli forces announced that they will be deploying two full battalions towards the West Bank today, starting this morning, which means eight units to be deployed in the occupied West Bank. And this is a very alarming issue. From one side, we have the Jewish holidays coming closer, and of course, as I all the time mention to you and to our respected viewers, the Jewish holidays for Palestinians does not mean time for peace and for taking a break. No, on the contrary, Jewish holidays means for Palestinians more checkpoints, more aggression, more racist activities, and more settler violence, and more incursions towards Al-Aqsa Mosque. And this has started since today, since this morning. More raids are being documented inside Al-Aqsa Mosque. And as I have mentioned, that the Israeli forces will be redeploying two battalions toward the occupied West Bank. This is from the Jewish holidays from one side. And the other side, of course, is the threats that have been going right and left from the Israeli government, from the Israeli cabinet, about the international and the European recognition for the Palestinian statehood, which is of course intended to be today and tomorrow before the UN General Assembly holds its meeting. And as a reaction for that, the Israeli regime has said that they will be imposing full control upon the West Bank. This is something, of course, that is in mind while seeing all of these Israeli forces sweeping, going into the West Bank. On the ground, the situation was also tensive since the hours of the morning. Let's start from the settler violence, which has surged, of course. Since the hours of the morning, groups of settlers are attacking Palestinians in the village of Deir Jarir to the northeast of Ramallah. Deir Jarir has lost recently, lost a Palestinian martyr from settler violence, which has the Palestinian Muhammad Adawi was directly shot by Israeli settlers, while three others were injured. And now the Israeli settlers are going back to Deir Jarir again to attack the Palestinians over there. Another phase of aggression from the Israeli settlers was that the Israeli settlers from the newly established Atara illegal outpost have attacked the Palestinians in Atara, and attacked specifically one Palestinian man who was driving his car, doing his job in the area. They broke the glass for his car and severely beat him, and now he is being hospitalized in the hospital of Hogo Chavez in the city of Turmus Aya. Now the Israeli settlers, of course, are expanding their aggression, expanding their settlement expansion. If we are to look at the situation in Masafer Yatta, the situation remains catastrophic, if we are to call it this way. Of course, there's no electricity, no water. The Israeli settlers have cut and for the electricity on the Masafer Yatta. And almost our attacks on the Palestinians over there, the late this morning, Kirbet Im El Khair in. And, of course, the settlers, all the time, they try to push the Palestinians out of the land that they inhabit. Moving to the Israeli forces' aggression upon the West Bank, most of the cities of the West Bank, Bahman, was raided throughout the night, not only Jenin. And Jenin has been witnessing a surge in violence. Of course, we are well aware that it's almost 300 days of relentless aggression by the military operation, the Iron Wall. Yes, But for the latest 2 months, we have seen the situation in Jenin was calming down a little bit. But now we are seeing it to go back towards more raids, more arrests, more. So we are. This is a reminder of the first days of this military operation. Specifically, the Israeli forces are working now on the ground on Khabatia, on all of the western, southern western villages of Jenin. Right. Also, Tulkarem, Qalqilia were raided. Ramallah over here was raided since the hours of the morning, and just little less than an hour ago, the Israeli forces withdrew from Ramallah.
Thank you so much, Nakar, for the update. That was Nakar Hamed joining us from Ramallah. And to end this news bulletin, thank you so much for staying with us.
Can we not see how the planets look like diamonds in the sky? And everything on earth was created for you and I. Can we not see man is merely all all again. Do we think it's all again? Do we think it's all again? Do we think it's all again? Do we think it's all again?
Welcome to Women of Resistance. Fadwa Ali Suleiman al-Masri lost her husband and son in an explosion by the Zionist entity at a shelter they had been directed the family to move to after forcing them to evacuate their home. Another explosion later on took her other son's limbs. Fadwa says the reaction on the Western world towards their plight is stronger than their Muslim neighbors. No major marches, no condemnations. She implores Western activists to end the pain by making a Palestinian state possible.
Gaza is the siren that forever calls you home. As the beating heart of Palestine, you can leave, but it beckons you back. The specter of Israeli occupation was never far. Fadwa lived with the constant trials and tribulations of what it truly meant to be part of an oppressed society. Like most Palestinians, no barrier was too much to stop the pursuit of knowledge. The soul of Gaza cries out with the injustice meted out to its people, its very soil saturated with tears, blood, and the bodies of the fallen. Fadwa recounts her own experiences of life during this genocide in all its visceral ugliness. Fadwa has one burning mission, to try and get specialist help for her now disabled son. For Fadwa, life now renders the past perhaps a rosier one. It's hard not to linger for what was when the present is a soul-sapping descent into the Israeli-fueled abyss. Fadwa speaks for Palestinians when she says the idea that Gaza will be simply given over to foreign powers is a non-starter. This new Nakba has been brutal, but Palestinians have a secret weapon. One that has lifted, fortified, and replenished Palestinian society in some of its darkest moments. In the midst of her own personal battles and fight for survival, Fadwa still spares a moment to assist those who are even worse off in true Palestinian spirit. Fadwa's mixed reaction to Western action on Palestine raises some important questions. The disgust at Israeli action has not been mirrored by firm action, especially from sections of the West that loudly advocates for equality. Fadwa knows temporary fixes will not solve the Palestinian question. The solution has to be bold and brave. Without full cooperation and commitment from the international community, it will be again left to the Palestinians to shoulder their burden alone.
Joining me in the studio today to discuss Fadwa's story is Sarah Carraway of the Women of Color in the Global Women's Strike. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you.
Sarah, you know, we've just seen the story of Fadwa. Have you ever seen women as strong, as resilient as Fadwa, for example?
Well, first of all, I wanted to just say our hearts go out to Fadwa and all the mothers in Palestine. We're absolutely devastated by what's unfolding on our television screens. It's just, it's horrifying. It's infuriating because world leaders are complicit with it. And Israel could not do what it's doing without many world leaders and world governments backing them in a policy of genocide. So we always think of the mothers and children. We know that something like 67% of those killed have been women and girls, and that mothers are starving. Newborns can't breastfeed because the mothers don't have food, water, health care. So this is an absolute urgent situation, and we know that Fadwa represents tens of thousands of other mothers, not only in Palestine, but in places like Sudan, Haiti, Congo. There are many slow genocides going on, and at this moment, Gaza is urgent because of its just horrifying, and we have to do all we can to stop it. That's our message to the Palestinians. We're taking all the action we can. Millions around the world are with you, and our hearts go out to the mothers.
Truth is, Sarah, that, you know, Gaza has been an emergency for the past almost 2 years now. And to think that, you know, nothing has been able to stop this atrocity going on, when it comes to the bottom of it, it is the issue of racism, isn't it? I mean, you come from the Organization of Women of Color. If these were white women, we wouldn't be seeing this happening even for a month. Is that not the reality?
It's true. We're dealing with an apartheid regime. We're dealing with, this is the urgent anti-racist movement of our times. And as people of color, as women of color, we have a particular role to be speaking out, to be acting for Palestine. Our sisters, you know, the Palestinians are our people. You know, the children are our children. And we feel that deeply as women of color. But I think all humanity is standing with the Palestinian people. It's just the governments and the leaders are on the other side. And that is the problem we're dealing with. Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, when we talk about white women, they also oppose racism, many of them. But just the mindset of the whole imperialist colonial mindset was really always to oppress people of color. But let's move on to the issue of the Palestinian state. You know, Fadwa says a lot of their problems will be solved if there is a recognition of Palestinian state. Now, that is also something controversial because many people believe that's just not enough. What are your views? What do you think about that?
Well, we think it's up to Palestinian people. The Palestinians will say what they want to happen. At this moment, our role is to fight for an immediate ceasefire, to stop the war, to stop the starvation and genocide, and to call out Israel's crimes. You know, these are war crimes, these are crimes against humanity, and we need world governments to act against Israel to stop what they're doing. That's our role at this moment. But in the end, the Palestinians will decide what they want to happen. But we have to stand with them and stand against our leaders who are complicit with Israel and what's happening.
Absolutely. And when it comes to, you know, women like Fadwa, Sarah, we always talk about, you know, in wars and during genocide, the people who, you know, take the burden of the pain is always women. And we've seen that, you know, in Palestine as elsewhere. Despite years of trying to fight, you know, for women's rights, why are we still here? I mean, do you think that the progress is there or it's really not there?
I think two things are happening. We're moving forward. We see millions of people on the streets for Palestine and for Gaza. We see movements coming together in a way we haven't seen for many, many years, decades. People are speaking out and are moving. Different faiths, different nationalities are coming together. At the same time, we are fighting a monster. I mean, our government ministers in the UK take money from the pro-Israel lobby. Yvette Cooper just took something like, last year had almost £250,000. And that kind of complicity is very big in this country, and that's what we're having to fight. And in the U.S., they're fighting Trump. I mean, we're dealing with very reactionary times. We're in the fight of our lives, and the only way to win is if we come together, we stand with Palestine, we call out our leaders, we stay on the streets, we apply boycott, divestment, and sanctions wherever we can. The student camps are springing up around the country. There are so many ways that people are fighting back. But we have to let the Palestinians know that we never forget and we never forgive the crimes that have been done to us.
Absolutely.
And to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk a little more about the Western advocacy. It's very interesting because Fadwa says, you know, she has more faith in Western democracy and has seen more movements in the West as opposed to, you know, neighboring Muslim countries. Why do you think that is the case?
Well, I think it's a complicated picture. Because on the one hand, some of the big, massive marches have gotten coverage internationally. At the same time, practically every day there's a demonstration, an action, things are happening on the ground that don't get reported. For example, we've been attending the International Jewish Anti-Zionist Network weekly picket for Gaza, which started back in October 2023. It's been going for nearly 100 weeks now, and it's been called together by Jewish anti-Zionists, which is very important that Jewish people speak out and call the Israeli government to account. But that pickets like that often don't get much publicity. So the two things are happening. But I would also mention places like Turkey, Yemen. There have been, on the ground, people are taking actions, but our governments are often
absolutely
on the other side. And just the last of all, I saw in Senegal, a group of students chased the Israeli ambassador off campus. So everywhere on the ground, people are taking many actions, but they don't get publicized. And, yeah.
But there's also the reality, Sarah, I think, of the fact that in certain, you know, Gulf countries in particular, and those very, you know, close to Palestine, like Egypt, for example, you know, that we have dictators who won't allow. I mean, we've seen in Egypt, for example, how people put food, you know, in these bottles and send it across the ocean to try and alleviate a little bit of the hunger. And yet, you know, they can't, they are not allowed. It's not that people don't have the feelings, but they are not allowed to be on the streets. They are not allowed to show their support. Is that, do you see that as a major problem, that apart from the Western leadership we are fighting for, it's not just limited here? I mean, the very area surrounding Africa, we talk of Africa, you know, talk about Sudan, Congo. It's the leadership everywhere that's a problem, not just the Western one, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And the dictatorships everywhere. And often they're fueled by the West. I mean, Trump, people like Trump are fueling and encouraging dictatorships everywhere in the world. But we particularly call out the UK and the US governments because they have such a history of imperialism, of land grabs, of ethnic cleansing. I mean, my own tradition, you know, we are from the history of the Atlantic slave trade. So we know about the crimes that they've done, and they have a particular role in this, in fueling other dictatorships around the world. But you're absolutely right. The people in power are often completely opposed to those of us on the ground, and that's what we're fighting. That's what we're fighting against.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think for those of us, you know, in the UK here, sitting in London, we do have a bigger responsibility, considering, apart from what you said, you know, we were the main colonizers, but also the Balfour Declaration, the whole problem in Palestine is the creation of this country.
Yes.
And we have been seeing, I think, activism and protest in unprecedented, I think, for Palestine ever. But there are also challenges to that, Sarah. What have been some of the biggest challenges we are facing in advocacy here?
I think the problems we face are the fact that this government and previous governments have been very much tied up with the pro-Israel lobby, with pro-Israel businessmen. I think something like half of the labor ministers have taken funds from those sources. So they're very tied up with the Israeli establishment, and they're backed by people like Trump. This is a major problem. I think another problem is partly what your show is addressing, the fact that the voices of women are often not prioritized. The voices of mothers don't get prioritized. Many of the grassroots movements on the ground are led by women, but very often women are invisible.
But it isn't just that, Sarah, when women do get into power, a lot of them don't act much different, do they?
Yeah, this is a problem, and we call it careerism and opportunism, that at the grassroots we build our movements, but the people who go up in the establishment become the establishment and don't represent what they should were put there to do. And one of the positive notes is there's an MP called Zahra Sultana who very recently has come out and said that she's absolutely anti-Zionist. So this is a useful signal of where some politicians are moving, but there are very few like that.
But the movement has started, and, you know, it won't stop. And thank you, Sarah, for all the work you're doing, and thank you for being with us today.
Can I just finish by just sending a message? Our message to Palestinian people is that we won't stop. we stand with you. We won't accept the genocide. We say free Palestine, and none of us are free until Palestine is free.
Absolutely. And free it will be one day. Thank you very much. We leave you with the sounds of Palestine by the artist Saif. Goodbye.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
The Ocean of Dua.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarisi, and we're going to be with you with another edition of the Ocean of Dua. And in this version of the program, we are trying to cover some of the names of the Almighty Allah that are recommended to be recited to invoke Him for obtaining benefits. So stay with us.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajahum wa al'an adahum ajma'in.
Dear listeners, today and in this program, we're going to talk about some of the names of the Almighty Allah that could be recited while we're invoking Him, two of which you recite every day and on a regular basis, Ar-Rahman and Ar-Rahim. So let's just start with the name Ar-Rahman. Ar-Rahman means the Beneficent, which some commentators believe that the word Ar-Rahman, the Beneficent, means a kind of general mercy and favor of the Almighty Allah that includes everyone and everything. So after the name Ar-Rahman, let's get to the word Ar-Rahim, the Merciful. We always say, Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful. So first, the word Beneficent was mentioned, and now it's the time for the word Merciful. But Merciful, although it is, as the word Ar-Rahman, a manifestation of the Almighty Allah's kindness and favors, but it is not that general. It just includes the true servants of the Almighty Allah and the ones who are specified, and somehow the believers. So, In contrary to the word Ar-Rahman, this word Ar-Rahim, the merciful, is not general and is a specific mercy of the Almighty Allah.
والحمد لله على طول أناته في غضبه وهو قادر على ما يريد الحمد لله خالق الخلق باسط الرزق فالق الإصباح ذي الجلال والإكرام والفضل والإنعام الذي بعد فلا يرى وقرب فشهد النجوى.
In our invokings and in our du'as, we'd better start our du'as with this, Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, and then we start asking the Almighty Allah whatever it is that we want. So all these being said about the words Ar-Rahman and Ar-Rahim, but one of the other names of the Almighty Allah, which is so vastly known by the people, is Ar-Razzaq. Ar-Razzaq, dear listeners, means the giver of livelihood. Of course, all the things we are mentioning in this program, dear listeners, have some different conditions to be met if we want to achieve the results. But whatever happens, reciting these names of the Almighty Allah will bring more the attraction of the Almighty Allah, and we can gain more benefits, especially while we are invoking Him and reciting dua. Don't forget, dear listeners, that these names that we mentioned will have their benefits and will help us to gain more benefits while we're invoking the Almighty Allah. But on condition that we believe deeply from the bottom of our hearts in them. About the word Ar-Razzaq, for example, we should believe that it is only the Almighty Allah, only Ar-Razzaq, the true embodiment of Ar-Razzaq, and not just the embodiment, the word itself is Him. That is the only one that we can refer to. That is the only one who is able to bring sustenance in abundance. But if you believe in the means and intermediaries other than the real one, the true Ar-Razzaq, reciting these names, any names that we mentioned, even reciting them every day and 24/7 wouldn't do us any good unless we believe in them and believe in the Almighty Allah.
Why do we make supplication? And why do we call out to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Is it because God is not aware of our needs? God is Al-Alim. He knows all of our needs. Is it because God needs convincing? God is known as Al-Jawad. He is the source of generosity. Then why am I making dua to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? The dua is a journey of realizations. When a person goes to the ocean and he takes with him a bucket that can carry 4 liters of water, the ocean is infinite. In as much as your vessel is large, that is the amount of water that the ocean will give you. And therefore, our goal is to expand our capacity. Rumi has a very beautiful poem. He says, "Har khujo mushkil javab onjo ravad." Wherever there is a problem, that is where the answer will come. Wherever there is a vessel, that's where the water will come. Don't go seeking for water. Instead, create the thirst within you. So that the water may burst forth from above and from below you. Experience that realization that you need God, and the mercy of God will come towards you.
Paradise, thank you Allah, let me hear, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever.
The ocean of dua.
Another name of the Almighty Allah that could be recited in order to gain more benefits while we're invoking Him, and especially in the beginning or in the middle of our du'as, is the name Ar-Raqib. Ar-Raqib literally means the guardian. So the Almighty Allah is protecting all the universe, and especially the ones whose rights are being taken away. It has many benefits, reciting this name, dear listeners. Even the names of the Almighty Allah are cure for the true servants, but only on condition of knowing and believing in Him. Another name of the Almighty Allah, dear listeners, is Ar-Ra'uf. Ar-Ra'uf means the compassionate. Dear listeners, another name of the Almighty Allah is Ar-Rafi', the exalted. By believing in this name of the Almighty Allah, Ar-Rafi', the exalted, and also by reciting this a lot, we can ask the Almighty Allah to be protected from the unjust superiors or rulers. The name Ar-Rashid is also another name of the Almighty Allah. It doesn't have any specific one-word equivalence in English, but it could be translated into the one who guides on the right path. Since the word Rushd means the right path, and Rashid is the one who guides the people to that right path. So we can recite this name, Ar-Rashid, a great deal regularly, so we will never go astray from the right path. The believers and Muslims always need reminders in their lives. In fact, whoever has set a goal for himself or herself during his or her life always needs some kind of reminders not to go astray and not to go off peace. By reciting this name and asking the Almighty Allah, then we can hope that by the help of God, we will reach all our legitimate desires, and those will be fulfilled. But the condition is that, dear listeners, we believe that the Almighty Allah is the Creator, is the all-knowing, all-seeing, and all-hearing. And although He knows whatever is deep within our hearts, but we should say that out loud and ask Him whatever it is that we are trying to say. He Himself has ordered us, and we have been ordered to recite this. He Himself has said, "Ud'uni astajib lakum," call unto me and I will respond to you. And by these names we have mentioned here, dear listeners, we can recite these names many times throughout the day, or especially in the beginning of our du'as, to gain more benefits while we are invoking the Almighty Allah, Ar-Rashid and Rafi'. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Of praising Allah to glory. Prophet Muhammad climbed down in despair, engraved in his heart were the words of his Lord. To all of mankind, this was his call. La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah. O people, praise only Allah, glorify
Kerman is counted as one of the oldest cities, and it was founded as a defensive outpost with the name Veh Ardashir by Ardashir I, founder of the Sasanid Empire, in the 3rd century AD. Kerman was ruled by Turkmens, Arabs, and Mongols after the 7th century, and was expanded rapidly during the Safavid dynasty. When Marco Polo visited Kerman in 1271, it had become a major trade center linking the Persian Gulf with Khorasan and Central Asia. Ganjadi Khan was the governor of Kerman during the Safavid era. He ruled thousands of cities and towns from Fars province all the way to the city of Herat in today's Afghanistan. During his time, he built lots of public places in the city of Kerman, including this huge square, bazaar, mosque, and a public bath. Kerman Kerman's Jame, or Central Mosque, is a part of the Muzaffari aggregate and was completed in 1345 AD by Amir Mubarizuddin Muhammad Muzaffari Meybudi Yazdi. The mosque is one of the most ancient structures of the country and a remnant of the Iranian monarchs after the Alibuya dynasty. The mosque has a tall gateway in its eastern sector, and the same has been decorated with beautiful tile work. A clock tower aids in the enhancement of this entrance. The structure has been constructed in a symmetrical fashion and has a winter and summer porch.
Walking through dark and narrow halls to enter a huge and lighted area is a style in Islamic architecture of the Safavid era to give you the sense of joy and pleasure of entering a place like a public bath, which was not only for personal sanitation, but also for socializing, with people coming, sitting down, smoking hookah and pipe, and talking about social and political issues, or even finding husbands and wives for their kids. Back in the old days style.
Built in the Safavid period, this courtyard is home to what was once Kerman's most important hammam or bathhouse, the Hammam Ganjali Khan, now restored and transformed into a museum. With the conversion of the population of Iran to Islam, ritual purity through washing one's body became a requirement of religious life. Thenceforth, bathing became an integral part of life. Besides, baths were frequented not only for purity and hygienic reasons, but also for medical purposes. Physicians prescribed taking the waters against a great variety of ailments.
Whenever I get a chance to travel to different cities of this beautiful land of Iran, I definitely stop by the bazaar of that city. Not just for shopping, but for the whole experience. Experience of meeting people from different backgrounds, with different ethnicities, different ages, different dialects, and so on. Another part of this experience is the pleasant scent of the bazaar. Smells of colorful and different spices, dried fruits, and even dried dairy products. It's just amazing.
A review of Iran's economic and social history indicates that the bazaar has always been a pillar of civic foundations. No town could survive without the bazaar, whether big or small. Some have allegorically described bazaar as the economic heartbeat of the Iranian cities. The ancient Iranian bazaars have gradually evolved into an encompassing section of the town. A bazaar was not a secluded section of the town, but home to a wide spectrum of goods and services sought by the townspeople. Archaeologists could find proofs of the existence of a 6,000-year-old bazaar in a place called Khabis near Kerman, a place which is now called Shahdad. I know you definitely want to know more about Kerman, and I'm not finished exploring this city. So we'll see you soon in the next program about some other attractions of Kerman. Shahriyar Azimi for Iran.
Heard the boastful Persian saying that art only belongs to Iranians. With their wide variety in color and patterns, and each motif and design specific to a particular region, Persian carpets are definitely something to boast about.
In Iran, carpets have always been both symbolic and practical. A popular design that is often used in this region is called Rizmahi, which means the little fish.
Quality craftsmanship is the name of the game, and the painstaking procedure of knotting invented by ancient Persians is a means to reflect a people's identity.
It may take a group of up to 15 carpet weavers nearly a year to create the masterpieces that will be decorating the floors, giving any room warmth and style. Iranians are definitely the masters of weaving. Jajim, which is a kind of thick two-sided cloth, itself can be considered enough evidence to support the boastful statement that art only belongs to Iranians. There was a time when jajim was considered a luxury item, but today it's used for making traditional handbags, something you can take back home as a souvenir from Iran. Jajim is normally 2.5 meters long and 2 meters wide.